Hello, everyone. This is And Just Like That, The Writer's Room, the official companion podcast from HBO Max and Pineapple Street Studios. I'm Michael Patrick King, executive producer, writer, and director of And Just Like That. And I'm joined by executive producer and writer Elisa Zaritsky.
Hi, everyone.
And executive producer and writer Julie Rottenberg.
Hi, guys.
And co-executive producer and writer Rechna Fruchtbaum.
Hey.
Hey, Rech.
Hey, guys.
Well, we are at the finale episode of And Just Like That. And Just Like That, we're at the finale. It feels like it was much longer than In Just Like That from the minute we started talking about it to actually talking about the completed journey. But here we are.
Yeah. Over a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which exactly. For television time is pretty fast.
It was really fast-tracked.
Yeah. And I also want to say right now that if you haven't watched the entire In Just Like That series up to now, please do. We're going to talk about all 9 episodes, all the way up into episode 10, the finale, which is called Seeing the Light. Whenever you're writing a series or a season finale, you always think finale, it means it has to be big. Something big has to happen, literally, no pun intended, but something big must happen. And what's interesting about what I think Carrie's storyline is, it's so small and delicate. And it's that her reading lamp starts blinking. And because it blinks for the first time after she has the kiss with Peter, the teacher on the street, she immediately thinks Big is mad at her. So to me, the idea of something coming from beyond, the metaphysical quality of what happens when somebody dies, how we sometimes look for signs, and that we waited 9 episodes for Carrie to even acknowledge that perhaps Big is still in the consciousness, not her consciousness, but in the bigger consciousness of heaven or spirituality
Ether.
Or metaphysics or magic. And that it comes because, as Miranda says, it's guilt. Get it fixed.
Right.
And Carrie says the lamp or the guilt. And she says both. So this little light comes on. Now, I want to talk about casting right now because it's important. That light was perfectly cast, that little lamp.
Yeah.
We looked at many lamps, but what I loved about the lamp, it almost feels like a thing. It almost feels like a crazy Pixar character. There's something manageable about how small it is and something beautiful about how diffused the light is and direct it is coming out, but it's so tiny. Once again, it's the tiniest lamp. And it's almost the tiniest thread of a story. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's huge. And I think we just started talking about being connected to people that have gone on.
And do you want to talk specifically about your lamp?
My mother passed on and seems to be coming through every light that she can find within our family, from Christmas trees to outside lights to my sister's recent experience where she was asleep in one of those adjustable beds and she woke up and it was moving and she looked over and the remote was all lit up. And a psychic told me that my mother was so excited that she could say hello through electricity. So, I mean, you can put that wherever you want, but the reality is it did give me a doorway to start pitching to these guys. What if something comes through a lamp?
Right.
And, you know, we had talked a lot about going to a psychic at one point.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We thought, that's that's a thing people do when somebody dies.
Yes.
They want to go to a psychic. But we've seen psychics, and then you're always doing the psychic character. So all of a sudden it became the lamp. And just the fact that it pops on after the kiss. And it's important that the kiss be a non-kiss because it opens the door to the Seema story, which is she's having a lot of good kisses with Zed.
Also, we like the idea of starting the finale with the end of their date. We were like, we don't need to see it.
Yeah.
No, because
luckily, sure it was lovely.
We get it.
We get it because luckily with John Tenney, we had built a 3-episode arc. So we know Peter. It's not like he's a rando. Mm-hmm. We've seen them on the first jokes they make are like, well, no one got hit by a bus or suffered a concussion. Mm-hmm. We know that their dating history has been 3 strikes and you're out.
Right.
And this one, they survived until the kiss. But it's not what she remembers a kiss to be. And then the light comes on and she turns it off. And then it comes on again. And then she jumps to the fact in the coffee shop. And by the way, we're back at the coffee shop. That's another thing we wanted to do in the finale. We rebuilt the coffee shop from Sex and the City, and we held off to the very last meal that they're all having together. We rebuilt that. That was the signature coffee shop, the signature chairs.
Down to the plates and the bowls.
Right. And people, I mean, people might not realize that the Sex and the City coffee shop was always a set.
Until the movie, and it became more realistic in the movie.
That's true.
But it was a look. It was it,
it
a
was
location?
Fake. It was never
It was
real.
Always fake. So, exactly. So we rebuilt that coffee shop this time around.
And because we felt comfortable showing them in their former environment with this ridiculous new circumstance where she's pitching.
She's pitching to her friends.
That biggest
mad
at her.
Yeah.
And that opened the door to a conversation we never expected to have.
And the truth is that happens. I mean, Lise, you can talk about after your mom died.
My mother's name was Renee, and I now stumble across a Renee everywhere. Everywhere I go, there are Renees. And so you can't help. Yeah, my mother is communicating to me.
Because you don't want to have fully said goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, then it becomes really the question, the big conversation was, Charlotte brings up, heaven. Because Miranda's really in a Miranda mode where she's like, you mean he's coming through your lamp? Sarcastic Miranda is way back. Like, I don't believe that there's anything weird happening.
Yeah, and I thought, I thought we were on the same page about this. You know,
which,
like, what's
triggered? In a way, it's the whole theme about change. Who are we? Are we the people we used to be leading up to that Carrie Miranda scene? In a way, the fact that she kind of gets her hackles up about, like, are you telling me you believe in heaven now? And Carrie's saying,
I didn't before, but maybe now I do.
I love that Miranda says, you think Big's up there, the way Cynthia goes, puffing on a cloud, puffing on a cigar. And Carrie basically is saying, if it makes me feel better to think that, yes.
Yeah.
Things have changed in view of my present circumstances.
Mm-hmm,
and that's
totally.
Really the interesting thing about the whole last grouping of the series of And Just Like That, these last 10 episodes, is things have changed. And their opinions are changing based on their current circumstances.
Yeah. I remember when my dad died and I was like, I've never been a religious person. And it was the first time I was like, I have never understood the purpose of religion more than right now. Mm-hmm. Because I wish I had a belief system about where he was.
Oh,
I also think it's one of the great benefits of being a writer, that when something tragic happens to you like death, you don't just have to sit in it.
Yeah.
You can spin it into the eulogy. You can write the eulogy. You can put it into another piece of writing like I'm doing right now with The Lights and My Mother. And then Carrie has taken it and crafted, because she's a writer, this scenario, this fantastical scenario, which she's sort of laying at the table like, yay or nay, like prove, disprove. And of course, Charlotte, all of a sudden, is like, do you think Big's up in heaven wanting you to never kiss anybody again? Do you really think that's who he is? I mean, that's a good sentence to ask.
And it's the ultimate projection of Carrie, because Carrie actually says, if it makes me feel better to think that he's up there and doesn't want me to kiss someone, she could have chosen to say he's blessed this idea, but instead it's her. She's writing all the rules. She's writing the story.
Correct. Right.
She's setting the limits.
And she's also being pushed gently by the lamp to start thinking about her feelings about kissing somebody else.
Yes.
And then the other gentle push we give her is from John's brother. He meets her for lunch and basically says, where's John?
Now, I just want to add that on set, I think this was one of the only times I can remember Sarah Jessica having a hard time getting through the scene for some reason. He couldn't, every time she had to admit that for a minute she thought he might be, you know,
senile.
Demented or senile or having early onset, she just thought it was the funniest. She couldn't keep a straight face in that scene. It was really funny.
Every time
you
said, "Where's John?"
Yes.
He just has the best poker face.
And I will say when I read that, when I got the draft, it like made me chuckle so hard.
And Sarah Jessica at the table when he said, "Where's John?" And she said, "He's dead." That was the line that she got to say that she loves so much. And this has one of my favorite pitches of all time that I've ever experienced actually happening to me was when Julie took a piece of paper and started drawing like that the brother would illustrate where the bodies were in the crypt. That made me so happy that that was a way of making that scene so real that Julie just started drawing it. It was amazing.
We were in your office. I remember when we were like how we were wrestling through that scene. And yeah, it was a way of showing that he's both, it's this very emotional thing for Carrie and he's turned it into this logistical, yes, an algorithm, a math.
Like it's real estate.
It's like,
but also he does point out to her, he draws a little square and says, "You could be here. And the two of you could be together forever," which when you hear somebody saying something like that, it just is ridiculous.
It's both sweet and hilarious.
Well, you're not going to be together because you're ashes.
Well, and it really pushes her to figure out
where he needs to be.
Where should he be?
Because he's on a shelf next to her very best shoes. And she, all of a sudden, for the first time, it's like somebody turned a light on, goes like, "You're ignoring this." And then he says it's coming up on a year, which is our way of saying to the viewers,
if you've been tracking this, this is a year.
Yeah.
Also, I believe that sometimes the people closest to the person who suffered the death, they couldn't be the one to do it. Someone else, he had to come in and give her the nudge.
And also say, ownership of the body. Like, I own him too.
Mm-hmm.
He's my brother.
Yeah. We're waiting. Yeah.
Which, who's going to win? Is he going with my family or what's your better plan? Which opens Carrie to the second chamber of her storyline, which is where does Big want to be?
Where does
Big want to be? Mm-hmm. But before that, she leaves that lunch and returns to the lamp store where she has taken the lamp earlier and says it just comes on weirdly by itself. Mm-hmm. And the clerk repairman says, "That's very strange," which you just is like, okay, got one more. I got one more in heaven camp.
Right.
One more in heaven.
Right. It is, isn't it?
Leading the witness.
It is. She's like, yeah. And then this time he says, "I fixed it. It was a wire."
Yeah. That's one of my favorite moments of her performance when she's disappointed. It's such a tiny moment of, oh, it was a wire. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know?
It like takes out the magic.
The magic, yeah.
He's gone. It wasn't a gentle reminder, but he's gone. Also, before that, though, you know, as you start to go through taking inventory, the first person she tells about the kiss is Seema, who is the newest friend. The second people she tells are Charlotte and Miranda, who are the 100-year-old friends. And then the final card that's not being played is her telling Samantha.
Yeah.
And the fun thing that happens in the diner scene is we start all the storylines in one scene, which is very classic Sex and the City storylines. One person says something, Miranda's storyline starts, ooh, I'm meeting Chase family. Charlotte has that Charlotte explosion of, ooh, things are going well. And Carrie says, "I love that you're still that girl." And then Charlotte gets a text from who?
The rabbi, Rabbi Jen, and we learn that Charlotte has been at the very, very late hour. I think we said it was 2 weeks before the mitzvah. All the other rabbis have fallen out, alleged family emergencies. And, oh, thank God they've gotten this trans rabbi. And who better to preside over a day mitzvah than a trans rabbi? And so we set up that Charlotte, over the course of this season, has gone from struggling and wrestling with her child's gender exploration to fully on board, embraced it, trans rabbi.
Built a party around it.
Rebranded the term from bar or bat mitzvah to they mitzvah. And of course, we know something's got to go wrong.
And then we meet Rabbi Jin, played by Hari Neff.
Oh, my God.
Who is so one of the strongest appearances I've ever, like, she walks in and it's like, oh, okay, that's her show now.
Yeah.
For that scene is hers. But before she comes in, we do have Anthony, which is so great. And he has his Hot Fellas bread business.
Oh, my God. Now, Elisa is a pro at making challah and knew a lot about this. We decided that we had to bring in the Hot Fellas guys because, as we mentioned, we always got bread on the days that we shot with the Hot
Fellas. Also, it's a storyline. I mean, rather than shy away from a lot of shows introduce an element that's a thing, and then they don't ever address it again.
Right.
And our two kind of abstract thoughts were the podcast, which became very real, and the Hot Fellas, which was like a funny business. And we actually were able to follow it through, A, because it's funny to us. We get free bread. We get to see those acid-washed little Abner Hot Fella uniforms. And it's a great color for Anthony. So he comes up with what, Lisa?
So he comes up with sourdough challah, which I did a little bit of research. It does exist. I've never seen it offered anywhere. In fact, I did also Google search, is there a challah, sourdough challah in New York City? To this date, I have not found it.
The only thing you can't find on all of Google.
One day, maybe I will try and make
it. Starting your own business,
But yeah, we always think, what would the characters really do? And I think Anthony really would have made sourdough challah for Charlotte's They Mitzvah event.
And it was also a perfect way, hearkening back to episode 3, when Anthony gives Charlotte a little bit of tough love advice to show that when he hears that Rock is dragging their feet and not practicing, not rehearsing, isn't ready, that it's Anthony who goes in there and is like,
cracking that
whip. Get your shit together. Yeah. Like, this is not a dress rehearsal.
And I should also add that Julie and I, this very year, both were blessed enough to, while we were working on the show, throw bat mitzvahs for our respective daughters.
So we had a lot to, and I
can speak for myself. I did actually learn a portion of my daughter's Torah portion as I, you know, a little bit supervised her rehearsal of the event. So
this is where it becomes clear Elisa's a much better mother or Jewish mother.
You know, the shocking thing about a finale episode, specifically this one, when you talk to production, is somebody said to me, there are three parties in this one episode. There's the They Mitzvah, which we always knew was going to be giant and fantastic and art directed.
The Rainbow High
and Charlotte.
Candy and the
candy bars.
The service and the party.
And then they're what turns into be a party, which Miranda thinks she's going to meet Che's family.
An intimate dinner.
And dresses oddly like she's going to Easter dinner. Like, she's wearing a pretty pink, presentable femme dress to meet the parents or the grandparents. And she walks into another party she wasn't expecting, which is this big nightclub party. And then the third party is the bizarre and fresh Jackie wedding to smoke.
The surprise wedding.
So let's just talk a little bit about Miranda's not parent Easter dinner that she walks into.
I had no idea.
She just keeps repeating, I had no idea, because Che has a big surprise. You're not just meeting my parents, you're meeting everyone I love, and I'm going to sing and tell you I'm going to California.
Through song. Through the Beach Boys.
So the idea of Che singing, you know, Sada Ramirez has an amazing voice. They won a Tony for Spamalot. They're a Broadway singer. They have a lot of soul. So it was like, okay, what are they going to sing? And I wanted it to be odd and a little silly. And so I knew that Che was going to announce California. So I thought about California, then California Girls, sung by someone of a non-binary gender. And then you see Miranda sitting between them, and they all have gray hair.
Right.
Which never experienced until that moment. We're like, oh my God, there's three women who love Che, and they all have gray hair. And then Che announces they're going to California. Now, Cynthia, come on. Cynthia's.
Well, we've set up at the beginning of the episode that she's relieved that this family meeting is happening because after the fight, I think Miranda was feeling insecure. So this feels mm-hmm. like another badge of things are going well. And then as she's watching Che sing the line,
East Coast girls. I really dig the way the clothes they wear.
Yes, and you see Miranda look a little flattered, a little like, ooh, me. And then it gets, obviously turns into this reveal, and you see Miranda trying to keep a good,
She's doing the math.
She's so game and kind of trying to pretend like I'm down with this. And of course, you know, inside she's dying.
And then pretending to be loving it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like totally on board. And I think we should talk about the fact that we really wrestled with, like, are they going to be together at the end? Is this the end?
I mean, right. For a lot of the writing process, we thought this was
to that.
Breaking them up.
She was going to go, and then she wasn't going to go. That was we were building that conflict.
For a long time, we were talking about the question of monogamy, and with Che over in California not promising to stay faithful to Miranda, what would—
That
would be unacceptable, and that actually does make a lot of sense, but—
It doesn't make sense if Che doesn't say that,
exactly,
though. So once that's removed,
exactly,
which
then,
Che doesn't say that.
Right.
Che says, I wanted the woman I love to be in the room with all the other people
I love. And then also Che says, I want you to come with me. So that was—
Big.
That was a big offer.
And the other interesting thing about it, it's fraught. Because before Che can sing, they down two shots of mm-hmm. tequila.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're asking someone who has just had a kind of borderline drinking issue.
Oh, yeah.
The audience is watching someone who needs liquor to sing, watching Miranda, who when later in the second part of this thing where they're actually having the conversation, Miranda's twisting open a mineral water carbonated bottle. And she's drinking it's almost like a drinking game. Every time Che says something that emotionally upsets her, she pours another something.
I felt like we were building toward Miranda realizing, I have to choose myself. And then suddenly that felt like the expected thing. And of course, it's going to be Miranda chooses herself. And then we were like, why are we doing that?
I also think we really, I don't know, at least for me, there was like also just like wanting to be clear for Miranda that she didn't leave Steve for Che.
Right.
She left Steve because it wasn't working anymore. And then she has Che, and that those things aren't like intertwined in the way it would seem. So I think part of the avoidance of having her do the thing that now it's like, of course she has to go, was like wanting to make that clear.
Well, plus also the interesting thing in 2022, as people watch and sort of process this, it's 2022. We're talking about characters that we would never have seen in 1962, yet people still want to promise. Like Che has to promise something. Like, if you're leaving that person, then you better have a firm commitment to this person. It's so interesting how we keep dragging our societal paradigms, our patterning, which is what we've talked about a little bit in episode 9, into our current reality. So the interesting thing that we came up with, and I think Alisa was like, she has to give herself permission to change and then change back. She kept wanting very strongly, and Julie and I were like watching Alisa birth this idea that you can be one thing and then change back again.
Well, yeah, we had two arguments, discussions around Miranda, and one was, should she go or not? And then the other was around her hair, changing her hair back to red. And I felt like Miranda as a character all these years has been so many great things, but she's also been very rigid. And in her mind, following, you could almost see that she's following so many rules that she made up and that she feels strongly about and that she believes in. And that at a certain point, I think I felt very strongly that she had locked herself into a box that she needed to break out of. And yeah, that felt exciting. And then the idea that she would go back to her gray hair, we had, you know, that just sort of like bolt of blue. What could be the final moment for, what's a final moment for Miranda? And it came to me, the red hair. And we had talked earlier in the writer's room.
When you said the right, you actually gave a like a qualifier. Okay, I'm going to say something. Get ready. I'm going to say something. What if she dyes her hair to red?
Yeah.
And my first reaction was like, no, no.
Julie's a redhead, by the way.
I'm a redhead.
That's Julie's thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, well, probably because I one day might have to wrestle with, do I dye my hair? And I think I bought into this idea that Miranda was being true to herself by letting her hair go gray.
And well, she made speeches.
Yeah. Yes.
That's what I love.
Right.
And
yeah,
in
right.
the classic, our show, our other familiar show, before this familiar show, is when anyone made a soapbox, it had to break.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
That's
and
it.
And I think my first reaction of no, 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 no was, what will that say? Are we saying something that
right.
like you oh, have
yeah.
to
right? And that's
that you're
exact,
right.
Yeah, and that's,
that your adventure lives in this like superficial thing or something.
Right. Yeah, like yeah. we made a statement. The gray hair, and I think in my mind, that's what Miranda would. That would be her first level. Well, what is this going to say if I do this? And then fuck it, I feel like it.
I'm allowed.
I feel like we're allowed yeah. to feel like doing things.
Yeah, and I feel like thematically, too, this series was also, like, obviously exploring, like, what's new chapters look like, how do you shift, how do you change, but then also what pieces of you do you keep with you, right. even in your change things. And so in some ways, Miranda choosing red is like, that's a piece I'm keeping. I want to do that,
right.
you know? And I think
right.
that's right. really cool. In the same way, Carrie's like, look, I don't care if I have a hip deformity. I'm still the girl who wears heels. Mm-hmm. Like, right. there's the stuff you keep and the stuff you shift.
Yeah.
And
but especially with Miranda, when she makes a, she holds the, you know, which Brady says, what happened to all the gray pride, which is just so close to gay pride, but it's gray pride and it's both her storylines and it's very yeah. weird. But the idea that not only does she go back to being who she was, she goes back to being what her hair color was,
yes. right.
which doesn't
right.
mean that's who she is.
That's
that
it.
Means that's
I'm
what
like,
color her hair is at this moment. She also lets go of the internship, which is nothing Miranda would ever do.
Right. right. And something we felt sure that if I'm watching that show, I'm like, she's going to do the internship. She's not
right.
going
out. Right. As soon
LA.
As Naya tells us there's an internship
yeah.
at Human Rights Watch, yeah. But
we know what Miranda's going to do.
And that also led us to, because remember that scene in the bathroom with Miranda and Carrie and Rabbi Jen did not exist at the time of the table read. And I remember, first of all, we loved Hari. Am I saying it
yes.
right? We loved that actress so much that we were like, let's give her more. But people who have been friends for 100 years, there is also this implicit feeling of a contract of like, you're this person. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you make certain changes, it also harkens back to the first episode where she says, you don't like my hair because it makes you feel old. It's like, if you're going to do this crazy thing and be un-Miranda, leave the internship and go with someone who may or may not give you what you want or need in the end, then that's going to force me to look at what I'm
but
doing.
I want to point mm-hmm. out that no one says that. That's in Miranda's head.
Of course.
And also, Carrie doesn't say, if you're going to do this crazy thing, mm-hmm. doesn't judge it.
Right. Yeah.
She says, are you doing this? Why are you doing this? There's a door open. Their conversation in the bathroom is about surprise. And Miranda comes in trying to be all of Miranda. Mm-hmm. She comes in with a schedule. I can do this if I do this. Right. If I do this, I can go to Paris and drop the ashes with you. I can do this, I can do this, and I can do this. And then she's also arguing the other part, which is when Carrie brings up reality, you can't do that. It's too far. She goes, but I want to be there. I want to be there for you, and I want to be there for Che. And Carrie's just the mirror to her insecurity. Yeah. And Carrie is not judging her. She judges her once when she says, what are you going to do? Sit in an audience and laugh all day.
That's a judgment.
And then she owns it. But the fact of the matter is Miranda is in a growth spurt. It's really about the fact of the matter. And Elisa, you said you can have a choice. And what I agree with that with a caveat, which is as long as you're honest and clean with the people whose lives you're affecting along the way.
Yeah.
You can't just leave Steve and go. You have to sit down from Steve. And
you have to have the hard conversations.
You have to have the hard conversations with your partner that you're leaving, with your partner that you're going to. And the great thing about the nightclub scene after Che sings is old Miranda is there calling Che on their shit. You had no time, but you'd had to do a, you had enough time to do a whole song and practice. And then Che goes, I'm a fucking narcissist. Che's a stand-up.
Owns their shit.
The one line we did cut was, Miranda, you don't like stand-up comedy. But that's like the in the old draft of Carrie trying to awaken Miranda to her old self. It's like, you don't, you hate stand-up. But the idea of Carrie and Miranda in the bathroom having the, as Regina just said, the hard, uncomfortable conversation, but it's really Miranda just saying, why can't I be this new person? And Carrie says, you can. Why are you asking me for permission? And that's the grown-up.
That's right. And it's like sort of saying like it's you don't just come of age one time at 13 or whatever.
Right?
Like
that's
there's many
so
chapters
true.
And you can come of age at any of those chapters. And I think like there's so much, even though it can it might feel shocking to people, there's so much hope in Miranda's story.
By the way, first of all, this whole thing happens when somebody's in a traditional bat mitzvah, somebody would be turning from a girl to a woman. And all of a sudden, these two grown-up 55-year-olds are having a discussion while they're eating penny candy.
Yeah.
So they're like, they're 13 and 55. But the thing is, when Miranda says, I'm going to be in L.A., Carrie reacts with a, Miranda projects that Carrie's judging it. But in reality, Carrie's mortified that she assumed that anybody else had to continue on this journey with her. So she actually pulls away because she wants to get away, because she's,
she feels alone.
She realizes
the
mirror
is held up to her. That, I've been this needy friend.
And also, no one's going all the way with me. I have to do it alone.
Right.
But she assumed
just
that those two ladies would be there for her, just like Carrie assumed that she would take the internship. Needless to say, the last vignette of Carrie is Carrie's version of reality. I mean, the gown she's wearing, the hair, the Eiffel Tower bag, the gloves. That's Carrie's reality, folks. That might not be your reality, but if Carrie is going to go and say a final goodbye to the love of her life,
to the hilt,
she doesn't need anybody's fucking permission, including the audiences. She has an impulse. She is dressed
for herself,
and for her
late husband.
And Carrie's never been one who plays reality. There's nothing on a. There's no catalog that says, or book, what you should wear if you're dumping the love of your life's ashes off the kissing bridge in Paris. It's wrong to wear fuchsia opera gloves and a tangerine couture silk gown with Josephine Napoleon and Josephine hair done by Serge Nerman. It's wrong. Guess what, folks? Yeah. It's Carrie. So how we got to Paris is an interesting journey, because the reality is I always knew when you think of the old show, the significant end of that show was after the 6 years before the movies, the 6 years, Big told her on the bridge It's you. So to me, that's their moment. That's their opening in a portal. Mm-hmm. Paris, it's romantic, but it's actually
the fantasy come true.
It's the first time he really said that to her. So it's fantasy and reality. And the reason she's actually in Paris is because she, after she has the lamp fixed, metaphysical alert, not a spoiler alert, a metaphysical alert. After she has the lamp fixed, it blinks again. And she goes to sleep and she has a flash dream. She's back and forth between the bridge in Paris and Jackie and Smoke's wedding. The idea of that kiss, that romance brings her, whoom, oh, that's where Big wants to be. Now, you can say it's your subconscious. You can say it's Big. But that's the reason Carrie's in Paris, because she, in her subconscious, got a gentle reminder that that's a poetic end for them. And after such a tragic, tragic event, it's quite sad but poetic that that's where she releases Big. And the journey of pitching that to her friends and them not being, Miranda not being able to go, makes that even more of a harder earned journey, because she says to them at the end of the day mitzvah, you two got me this far. I have to go the rest of the way on my own or by myself. The great thing about a block comedy scene, which is what the they mitzvah is, where you bring everybody around and you're venting all the stories and trying to collide them. So the they mitzvah was just pure heaven, because what we've been chasing this entire season with Charlotte and Harry is their willingness to adjust how Rock is changing. Once again, am I allowed to not change and then change back again? And guess what happens?
As soon as you wrap your mind around something, it can change again. And also the idea of Charlotte acknowledging she can't control, she can try to be the best mom, and still it will
and throw the best the party
ass.
and
you can read all the books,
but also the incredibly evolved, I'm going to say, Rock point of view. It's so evolved. Like, can I just be me? Do I have to be all these other
labels?
Do I
have to decide now who I am?
That's the other thing.
There is something interesting about having them need to declare a major, you know, very, very young, you know. And maybe Rock, maybe some children do know very, very young and can declare who they are at a very young age. Not everybody is, and maybe there's time, and everybody's developing at different rates.
Well, talk about evolution. I mean, within Rock, in this 10 episodes, Rose goes from Rose to Rock to labels. And then now, the youngest character of all the regular characters in the entire series is saying, all that's over. Yeah. I don't want to be called that.
And don't tell me.
And then
me.
You have Miranda, who's still lobbying for her ability to
make a choice.
To make a different change. Version of herself viable.
Yeah, to like be outside her dogma.
Mm-hmm.
And it just shows the generational difference.
And it was important for us.
And similarity too,
As writers of a character who's 13, played by Alexa, who is now representing in the series a non-binary character, it was important for us to look at where the world is and where 13-year-olds are. And they are currently changing the world within the context of change by saying, I'm not using a name that's a human name. I'm Scout or I'm Rock.
Mm-hmm. And maybe as adults, we have a sort of an inherent need to control, to define and control everything, no matter what is happening. That's kind of the paradigm that we're stuck in, where
we're like a label
addicts,
generation.
Addicts or something. Like, well, now you're this,
Well, that goes back to the stand-up where Che says, basically, check a box. Which box are you going to check?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the reality—
We're box checkers.
And then Harry is so funny going, you know, like, what?
An Oculus?
What do you want? Like, who are you?
What's and it going to take?
And Charlotte, yeah. I mean, literally, we've put Charlotte between a rock and a hard place.
Yes.
We've put Charlotte in
a hairy place.
In, in her worst nightmare, she's got a social event that needs to be a certain way.
Yeah.
And the key element is the star, who no one's been listening to.
Right. We said
saying,
it
I don't have
do
the
this.
Fire right. to learn these words.
Yeah.
I'm not practicing.
Right.
I mean, when someone is not doing something, instead you just label it lazy,
mm-hmm,
cocky, right. but in reality didn't identify,
mm-hmm.
didn't,
yeah.
and went the journey with the parents and then finally says, I'm not going to lie
doing it. Yeah.
in front of people.
Yeah.
And in a way, while the Rose Rock story is a very specific one about gender, it's really just, it applies to all of parenting because
1,000%.
Your child is always going to surprise you. You're never going to be able to wrap your whole yeah. mind around mm-hmm. wherever they are. If you're
zig when you think they're
yes,
going to zag.
Yes, just right. when you think you figured them out, yeah, they surprise right, you again.
Right. And the more control you want to exert, the more it's not going to happen.
Yes. So.
But the great yes. evolution is that we created a comedy situation where we get to see these parents up against a hard place, and yeah. then for Charlotte, she makes her demand. Her soapbox stands on a soapbox. Someone's going out there and doing
they
this
must,
gay they today, and then it's her.
And then I, at this moment, I need to give a special shout out to Kristen Davis because that woman, in the previous series, Julie and I wrote the Shabbat episode where she memorably pounds on the table and says, set that date, after she's made her first Shabbat dinner for Harry. And in that episode, she had to memorize the Hebrew prayer over the candles. And boy, did she study
she
to
practiced.
Learn that. And then this, I before Kristen got that, got the script for the finale, I had a moment with her and I said, I hope you're okay. Hope you don't mind learning one more bit
prayer.
Of Hebrew, and
did you have to sing?
So she learned it,
yeah,
and
sure.
she studied
she
it,
does everything.
And she's so amazing.
They
she's
do everything.
A dream.
She's a dream, and I was beaming like a parent.
And I was editing that day when we shot the Day Mitzvah, so I wasn't on the set for this second part. And when I saw the dailies of Charlotte's family, I got so emotional because I saw it with fresh eyes.
Right.
I saw Harry, not her dream date, not the man she ever thought she'd be with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lily, the child she couldn't conceive, who became a daughter from China. And then Rock, who just 10 episodes was the child that she did give birth to as a daughter named Rose, standing there as Rock
in
a non-binary mm-hmm. pink suit. And just the image of that, where people get to in their lives, or where fictional people get to in their lives, mm-hmm. so touched me. But really the journey that really got me was how wide Charlotte's arms were to go for the love
yeah.
that she thought life needed to be. Like, oh, I'm not getting it this way. I'm just going to keep opening and opening and opening mm-hmm. and opening to the idea of love in whatever form it comes to me.
Oh, that's so well put.
Mm-hmm. And there it is. And it's nothing she would have ever written for herself.
Mm-hmm. No.
It's something that we were able to write for her, but it's only because Charlotte's heart was, her journey was so about love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you think about Carrie letting go of the love that she worked so hard to find and facing
the unknown.
The unknown. What's next? And what's next is our final little gift, our final little trick as a writing room.
Mm-hmm.
Our depth-defying magic act was Franklin. The engineer in the booth.
Yeah.
The hottest extra.
Yeah. We got Ivan Hernandez. I called up Bernie Telsey, who's our casting director. And I said, who's the most amazing actor that people haven't yet seen on television or in movies that they know of that we can cast and say nothing for a few episodes so that people would say, who's the hot extra?
Yeah. Which
is because we wanted to hide where we were going, which is he was eventually going to be somebody who became a bigger and bigger presence in the show. And just That's the idea great. That he's just the hottest extra in the first episode. And then in episode four, he starts to talk. And the first thing he says is he tells Chloe, she gets it. He protects Carrie's feelings. Mm-hmm. And then it just starts to be cute and fun. In episode three, he says, I agree, Carrie, about the city bike. So there's all these breadcrumbs, little, so much so that people like started glitter. Around episode four saying, she's going to wind up with him.
Yeah.
Well, wind up with him. What does that mean? The fact of the matter is the idea that Franklin at the wedding says to her, that's a kiss at Jackie's wedding, and then says, I've been watching you since you got there. You're a podcast. And then, of course, she has a joke. How dare you? But he goes, give me a shot. So, I mean, that's telling the audience, here's the match. This is it. Mm-hmm. He's right there for you.
And also, we didn't want to end on the bridge.
No, because
that's
most
where you think it would end.
Well, you would end. Let's talk about the bridge. Before we go past the bridge, let's talk about the bridge. Aside from letting go of Big, what she does is she picks up her relationship with Samantha.
Well, yes. And in a way, this idea that the worst thing already happened, she says that. And the truth is, now she's done the hardest thing, and I think it's a way of doing that other scary thing. And
or her heart's open, like Charlotte's.
Yeah, and, exactly.
And the other loss, the other really big loss, is this friendship. Samantha. And to sort of let go of the no longer alive love and realize that the other love is still actually alive. Not very far away.
Literally,
geographically.
It's a tunnel of love. Because you can go from Paris to London. It felt realistic that Carrie would be there and go, I'm in Paris.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Want to meet for a cocktail. And Samantha, for the first time, instantly responds, how's tomorrow night? And then Carrie types, fabulous, in caps.
We also ended all four of the women from the original with open hearts. Like that, all four of them end this season with, including Samantha.
Yeah, for the first time, she's lets her in.
Available, yeah.
Because, you know, there's a lot of wounds in life. And sometimes a year helps. With Carrie, it helped her let go of Big. With that time, and maybe Samantha let go of her stuff about Carrie because she says, how's tomorrow night?
Yes, she. Yeah. It's nice to imagine that she's grown also.
She's had her own journey.
You don't need to see what they said. All you need to feel is that they're back on track or they're in a new place. Mm-hmm. Can't I change and then change back again?
Yes.
Can't we be mad at each other?
Can our friendship change and
change back again? And can and the interesting thing about the going back into the podcast studio, it's Carrie alone. And she's ostensibly doing what she used to do was talk about love and heartbreak. Mm-hmm.
And I remember the moment it was you who came up with the podcast name is Sex and the City.
Yeah.
And we were like, what?
Yeah, and Sarah Jessica or Carrie, as Carrie looks directly into the camera and says, I'm Carrie Bradshaw, and this is Sex and the City. And that's another place you think, well, they're done.
That's the end, yeah.
No,
yeah.
They're not done because life goes on. And that's one of the things we've been able to do because of streaming and time and HBO Max is like, what's the story? Well, how long do you want it to be? Is that we can keep going because the show's always been about messy going. It's more than people think it should be. Mm-hmm. Literally, it's more. And like, oh my God. Yeah. And then you come around that corner and there's Franklin and Carrie and they're literally doing a cute little repartee. But the important
thing
is
you know.
What Carrie says to the caller. which is if you have one or two good friends in your corner, life is unfathomable. Or
I'm mystified. The older I get, I find myself more and more confused by what's happening, which I certainly relate to. And the future is unwritten, and you know, anything's possible.
Yeah. As far as love, she says, the future's unwritten. Anything is possible. And if you're watching this back after the podcast, that's when Franklin comes into the frame.
And just like that.
There's a kiss. There's a kiss. And what I love about the kiss is that there's a kiss. And then Carrie goes back for the second part of the kiss. Mm-hmm. It's not just a kiss, but as the doors close, she's like, more of that.
Yeah.
And so we leave the viewers after many episodes of Carrie's journey from dark to light in something that is very romantic.
And open.
Hopeful.
And open.
Possibilities there.
Possibilities. And there, we talked a lot about the last line. And we decided there is no, it's just, and just like that, dot, dot, dot.
That's it.
And, you know, people always think when you start a show, do you know where you're going? You're getting in the car. Do you know the destinations? If a show is a series, if a season of a series, it's like we knew where we were getting in the car at Big's death.
We knew where we were going, or we thought we did, and it changed.
Yeah, you take side trips, and you go, let's go over here, let's go over here, let's go over here, let's go over here. Yeah. What about this?
Because you have
you
to stay open.
You take an exit, you realize you don't like
there's
where
traffic.
You
traffic.
Yeah, but there is a concerted direct line from Carrie being alone to Carrie kissing somebody that is a very calculated, hard-earned journey that we wanted to make sure it took a year out of respect to get her to the place of
lightness.
And
it's a first kiss.
It's the, you know.
Between them.
Yeah.
And there is light, which is echoing the other lights, only it's not a malfunctioning light. Mm-hmm. It's an actual spontaneous light that just appears between the two of them. And just like that, we've reached the end of this podcast series. Thanks, Rechna, Elisa, and Julie, Kelly, and Samantha, for all the conversations about In Just Like That. And thanks to all you, the listeners. It's been a pleasure to open up our writing room. Till we meet again.
This is the official companion podcast for the HBO Max show And Just Like That. And it's a production of HBO Max and Pineapple Street Studios. Our executive producers are Barry Finkel, Gabrielle Lewis, Max Selinsky, and Jenna Weiss-Berman. Our senior producer on the show is Emmanuel Hapsis. Jonathan Shiflett is our producer, and Janelle Anderson is our associate producer. Our managing producer is Aaron Kelly. Josh Gwynn is our story editor, and our engineers are Davey Sumner and Elliot Adler. Production music is courtesy of HBO Max.